Hi everyone and welcome back to the XCast X-Files Podwatch, episode 83. And this episode is covering the Season 8 premiere two-parter, Within and Without. And I am Tony Black, your host, and joining me once again is Darren Mooney. It's been not very long for us, but it's been a while for the listeners, hasn't it, Darren?
It has indeed. I'm practically Robert Patrick. I'm not sure which one of us is Robert Patrick in the grand scheme of like X-Files podcast. Podwatching. I think I may actually have been on yesterday, so that may have been the worst possible introduction. I'm the Scully of this podcast.
I can be the Robert Patrick. Yeah, I can be the one everyone hates quite a while until they start to realise he wasn't that bad, and maybe we should have been nicer to him all those years ago.
While he was there.
Yeah.
Robert Patrick just looks... I want to hug Robert Patrick, and I know he's happy, and I know he's doing Scorpion, and I know he's had a rich, fulfilling career, and he probably doesn't care that much about it anymore, but I still want to hug him. Like, he's... he actually seems like, if you read his interviews that he gave around the time as well, like, Robert Patrick seems like a genuinely wonderful person, because he's like, when he was interviewed with Entertainment Weekly around the time they're shooting Patience, he was talking about how it'd be really nice if you could write something nice about me so the fans would stop hating me, and maybe I... the show, and you're like, oh,
bless him. Well, you know, I can genuinely say, hand on heart, much as I did miss Mulder, I never hated Doggett, and I did genuinely come to like him over the time. Anyway, we'll get into this. So we but yeah, we'll start by talking about part one, which is Within, which is the season 8 premiere, aired on November the 5th, 2000. And picks up, obviously, after the end of the seventh season, which many people thought was going to be the end of the entire show, Requiem, where Scully finds out she's pregnant, gasp, and then Mulder gets abducted by aliens, gasp, gasp. Double whammy cliffhangers. Yeah, Chris Carter, he doesn't really understand the idea of ending like a show, does he? Because every time he ends a show for good, or thinks he's going to end a show for good, either one of them gets abducted, one of them gets pregnant, they end up on the run, or... in the case of My Struggle 2, one of them's dying as aliens are arriving. It's like, just end a show. Just give us an ending, for goodness sake.
Well, I mean, I would argue Requiem is probably the best point at which you could have ended the X-Files. And you're right that it ends on two massive cliffhangers. But it's kind of fun to imagine like what you would have had if it had ended with Requiem, as I think everybody on the show had sort of been planning at the start of the season and became gradually less likely as like Fox horribly, horribly messed up its schedule. Would you have a situation like, would the X-Files revival been like Twin Peaks The Return, where it's like Scully now has an adult child and Mulder wanders out of the wilderness one day and they've got to piece their lives back together? How different would the show be if it had ended sort of on Requiem and you hadn't got Within or Without? And I want to say I love Within and Without. I think Within and Without are fantastic episodes, and the eighth season is really great just in general. I think it's one of the best seasons of the show, behind maybe the third season. The fifth season comes close as well, but the eighth season is just a fantastic machine. And it's one of those things where you can tell like the writers were in a position they didn't want to be in, and that's sort of like, it sparked that creative energy. It's like panic. It's like that great line, maybe from The Simpsons, I don't know how true it is, but that the Chinese are the same word for crisis and opportunity, and that's like, that's exactly that word is season 8 of the X-Files.
it's true. It is a great season, and you know, it starts, obviously, this opener is written by Chris Carter, directed by Kim Manners, you know, the two old faithfuls. It's all about Mulder. You know, Mulder's gone. Scully doesn't quite know what to do. And very quickly, as there's a task force being, you know, arranged to hunt for Mulder, she gets partnered with, not quite partnered yet. That sort of comes at the end of Without, but she ends up working alongside Special Agent John Doggett, who's Robert Patrick, as we talked about, who's drafted in as the Mulder replacement. And this was an impossible job for anybody. You know, Mulder, David Duchovny didn't want to do it anymore. Mulder was beloved, you know, at this point. Mulder and Scully in season 7 basically don't have to, they're having quite a laugh, really. They're taking it easy. There's not much peril, you know, that most of that season, they're just ambling around, having a bit of fun, you know, occasionally getting into some scrapes. But they're pretty much a functioning, you know, not quite married couple, really, by the time. It's all very cozy and nice. And then, you know, episodes like Je Suis, which I love, but it is just the most sort of knockabout comedy romp. And so it was at that point, and now you've got this, he's gone, she's pregnant, she doesn't know what to do, Mark Snow's got Scully's theme coming through to emphasise the pain, and you've got this new guy who turns up, and at first he seems like a bit of a jackass, and it's a completely different show straight away, in a really exciting way. You know, when you look back now, at the time when you were really connected to Mulder and Scully, it's hard to really swallow. But when you look back with the distance and you can look at it critically, it gives the show such a shot in the arm, these opening two episodes, doesn't it?
It does. And I think one of the things that's striking about the eighth season in terms of, like, the X-Files and in terms of, like, television as it was, because this aired in, as you pointed out, aired in sort of 2000 into 2001, is that this was a very early stage in terms of serialization. When we talk about serialization, we think of the mythology, but the mythology isn't really sort of serialized because it's not really, you know, A builds on B, builds on C, builds on D. It's like, okay, well, A branches off to maybe B is related to then C is happening with the same characters. Like with season 8, you have this wonderful sort of structure where it's a very clear story. And I think that, like, one of the things about the two cliffhangers at the end of the 7th season, which is Scully pregnant and Mulder abducted, is that it gives the 8th season, like, a sense of structure and something to build towards. Because, you know, like, Duchovny had signed the contract, like, at the 11th hour after Requiem had been filmed, after it had been edited, just before it was aired, saying he would appear in 11 episodes of the 8th season, which, by the way, is amazing to think. Like, Requiem had a different context and meaning when it was edited and when it was, like, filmed than it did when it was broadcast. It all just changed in an instant. But, like, that you have this idea that the production team know that Mulder is going to be around, they know Duchovny is going to be around later in the season, and they've given, like, Scully a pregnancy, which means that she has to give birth later in the season, which means that your 8th season, even before it begins, even before they work out the details, it has a structure and an endpoint, and it has something that it's consciously building towards. And it's just, it's remarkable because the show builds to that in a way that feels earned. Like, it's remarkable. You said that, like, as you point out, like, Doggett and Scully don't end up working together until the end of this two-parter, until roughly one-tenth of the way through the season. And, like, you have this wonderful stuff that happens throughout the 8th season where, like, the 8th season takes its time in doing what it's doing. Yeah. Like, you don't get inside Doggett's head until Via Negativa, and then you do literally. Like, even the Doggett-centric episodes early in the season, so, like, Invocation, where you discover it's hinted that he lost a son, that's not a Doggett-centric episode because it doesn't have Doggett, like, talk about it in great detail. It doesn't explore his perspective. It's more like he's an object of curiosity. Red Rum, where Doggett's old friend sort of gets living time backwards, where that's not really a Doggett episode either because you don't really get into Doggett's head in that. You just... The show takes its time. It takes 8 episodes until you literally get inside Doggett's head in Via Negativa. It allows the audience to sort of step outside and to sort of judge him and to sort of, like, Scully throws water in his face in his introductory scene, which is, like, this wonderfully sort of confrontational. I think Robert Patrick joked that he didn't mind getting it done because he knew that half the audience was going to want to do it anyway. But you have this thing where you can start with Doggett and you can start with Scully in one place, and you can trust that over the next 20 episodes they're going to change and they're going to grow and they're going to become closer. And it's just a remarkable sort of storytelling in terms of, like, 21 episodes in 2000 to 2001 before, like, 24, before Lost. Like, I think the 8th season holds together better than any other season of The X-Files as a narrative from beginning to end. I think you even see that with, like, in this, like, the recurring imagery. Like, you mentioned Mark Snow's Scully theme, which is that wonderful we are near thing that chants in the background. That comes up repeatedly over the season to sort of reinforce it. You have this idea of, like, Scully's pregnancy, which comes up time and time again through body horror. Like, even the slug in Roadrunners, or the creepy, as we have described, the book-dwelling Indian mystic from Badla, is like a twisted version of pregnancy. You have this sort of idea that runs through. You have this, like, three times in the course of the season, which is wonderful dramatic structuring. You have this idea of Scully following, or you have a character following a light in the sky to the person they love. It happens early on in Without, when Scully follows what looks like a light that's going to guide her to Mulder to the spaceship, but turns out to be a helicopter. You have it again in This Is Not Happening, where Scully follows the light to what she thinks is going to be Mulder, but turns out to be his dead body. And then you have it pay off wonderfully at the end of the season, where Mulder follows the light and it guides him to Scully and his newborn child. And you have this sort of wonderful sense of, like, The X-Files was changing, right? It was a different show. But, like, that change didn't happen in a single episode. It doesn't even happen in these two episodes. It happens over the whole course of a season, to the point where Mulder and Scully end the season is completely different than where they would have been if it had just been a cliffhanger. And the whole season seems designed, and it fits together to get them there. It gets you to, like, a point where Mulder and Scully are where they are at the end of the year. And it's just, it's a remarkable piece of television, a remarkable piece of writing, and something that doesn't get enough credit, I don't think.
No, absolutely. And it does begin in Within, you know, and obviously Without, you know, which you know, you have the seed sown here with so many plot lines, you know, obviously with Scully's pregnancy, Doggett coming in, you've got Kirsch back now as the deputy director, who's that new internal antagonist, because Skinner by default is having to sort of be a semi-Mulder, you know, in a way, and have, and sort of be that third partner, which, you know, and he appears a lot, and he ends up, there are certain episodes where, especially going to the night season as well. Yeah. Yeah, and he ends up being that sort of partner in a way as well. So he has to become a little bit more of an ally. So, and then you've got, you know, you've got your other incidental characters in the fray, you know, even people like Agent Crane, who ends up being one of the super soldiers, you know, he's here in this. So it's almost like it's got its own recurring character list as well within the mythology episode. So it's all really well constructed, and then obviously brings back Gibson Praise as well, and
the alien bounty hunter for his last appearance.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, sadly, yeah, for his last appearance. But it's got, you know, within establishes the new template really well, ends it with a pretty cool cliffhanger, and
literal cliffhanger, by the way, which is nice.
And on literal cliffhanger, yeah, it ends, and then off we go into part two. So, Without is second part. It airs on November the 12th, 2000, and it continues the story, really. Picks up from where we were last week. And Mulder seems to be back, weirdly enough. He seems to be around, and though obviously it's not Mulder. It's a version of the alien bounty hunter, because they're going around collecting up the evidence of the abductions that have been happening and trying to get their hands on Gibson Praise. And this episode's really sort of the... It just continues to establish, doesn't it, the new status quo and how it's all working, really, with Scully and Doggett.
It does, and it has a sort of wonderful atmosphere. Like, I mean, a lot of the first part, a lot of Within, is very sort of plot-driven. It takes place inside the FBI. You've got, like, these ridiculous reveal of Mulder's brain tumor, which is a plot point that goes absolutely nowhere. As much as we talk about, as much as I love the serialization of the 8th season, that's a dead end. That's resolved, I think, in a stray line in three words. But, I mean, you also, in the second part, you have this sort of, they go to Arizona, and it's just sort of, it's open, and it's desert, and you have this sort of wonderful thing. It reminds me a lot of, do you remember, is it Emily? You know, the opening scene of Emily, where Scully's wandering through the desert trying to find herself in this sort of dream state. And it's the best thing about that episode, if we're being entirely honest. And it feels like there's a lot of that here, where Scully goes out to the desert looking for Mulder and just sort of wandering through it. And there's the wonderful sequence where she wanders through at night. And it just sort of captures the sense of, like, it's very much the mood piece. Like, very little of what happens in this episode, like, plays off, like, plot-wise, in terms of, like, details of what the colonists are actually doing. Because, as you pointed out, it's like, Gibson Praise doesn't turn out to be a huge deal for the rest of the 8th season. The alien bounty hunter, you know, this is his last appearance. And even when what they're doing with Mulder on the ship is kind of vague, all it knows is that it hurts. It hurts a lot. Using the alien sets, by the way, which is a nice touch. I like that they use some set dressing from the movie Alien, which I think also plays into, like, the body horror pregnancy sort of nightmare that runs through the season. But I like that there's, like, Without just feels like a mood piece. It feels very much like you get a sense of how alone Scully is in the world, and how, like, Mulder's absence is not glossed over, it's not belittled, it's not, like... And you're right when you say that, like, it's a whole... Moving from the 7th season to the 8th season is a huge shock, because the 7th season was so, like, these are two guys hanging out, having beer, having popcorn, watching guy movies. But there's... It's Caddyshack. But there's a sense that, like, in this, that it is a momentous change, and it is earth-shattering, and it does mean something, and that it doesn't necessarily, like, it doesn't have to be something that can be solved or rational, that it's okay for Scully to wander off in the desert and to feel lost, and she really does. And Anderson is phenomenal in this season in general, and in these episodes in particular. Like, yeah. There's a sense of, like... We've talked about it in the podcast before. Duchovny could be great when he's on. He's amazing. He's fantastic. But there are points when Duchovny sort of zones out a little bit, I think it's fair to say. But with Anderson, she's a force of nature. Like, she deserved the Emmy that she got for the show, and then some. And the 8th season is just a showcase for her. There's such vulnerability and such emotion, such power in her performance. It's amazing to watch.
No, it really is. And I think what's great as well in Without, straight away, she has to immediately sort of try and fall into, not if not quite the Mulder role, she has to sort of go to a certain place that he would have naturally gone to had they been investigating something like this. You know, when it's all going off, when they're looking for Gibson and everything like that, she's, you know, she's the one who says he's alien, you know, he's a bounty hunter, and it's Doggett who's the one going, oh, come on, what do you want about? You know, this. He's the confirmed skeptic. Now, at the beginning, it would have been Scully who would have said, come on, Mulder, you know, back in the day. So immediately she has to, and you know, the season plays with this really well. You know, you get it in Patience in the next one a little bit.
You didn't get it but in Bad really Love, get it, like, which is not a great episode, you really but it gives get you a bit of meat there, you know?
Oh, but Badler's great for the fact that she just breaks down at one point and says, I can't do this like he does. I just can't do it. And that's such a great character point because she's trying to do that straight away. Because she knows it's personal to her. She knows that there's something to it all, even if she doesn't quite believe like Mulder can. But it immediately puts her in that role. And I think in that respect, it's what engenders Doggett to her as well. Because he, and by the end of Without, you realise he's fundamentally a decent guy because he immediately sort of realises that even though he's not a natural believer, he knows that something is going on. He knows there's clearly something not quite right about this whole scenario. And then when he's assigned to the X-Files, he's baffled by it because he doesn't really understand what he's in the middle
of. But he tries and he commits to it, which is something that I think is really great. And I think that's like one of the things is we talked about, like Robert Patrick, like stepping into Duchovny's shoes, like you get that like literalized in a sense with like Doggett's arc, which is like Doggett is thrown into something that is so much bigger and so much larger than he is, and it's so far outside his own frame of reference. He's being asked to do something that is impossible by any measure, which I think is what was asked of Robert Patrick, if we're being entirely honest here. And I think Doggett tries really, really hard, and you can see that. And like Patrick, I think very clearly tried really, really hard. And I think that, like, he, you know, these aren't great showcase episodes for Patrick, and that's fair because, like, you can't go from having Mulder disappear to putting the emphasis on the guy who's now in the cast, because that would be awful and that would be insensitive, and you would get everybody would be up in arms about it. But I think that, like, Patrick is willing to take a backseat and to let this be Anderson's show, but he's clearly, he is trying and he's invested in what the show is doing, and it just, it works. It really, really does.
And you can tell that Chris Carter's interested in the character as well because of the way he writes him and the way that it's all brought out, you know, in this episode. You know, you really get the sense that there's a real just richness to it already. There is an interesting dynamic here. There's an interesting character. There is a really new sort of style of mythology that they're going to try and build out of this. And even though Mulder is what it's about, you know, he's shadow casts long over the entire
season.
Well,
he's in the opening credits, even in episodes where he doesn't appear. Yeah. Like, there's no getting around the fact that Mulder's not here. And to the show's credit, it doesn't pretend that his absence is not a big deal and we're going to move on. Like, and they're lucky in that they have Duchovny sign that contract for 11 episodes and they can actually pay that off, unlike another season, which we may or may not be talking about at some time in the future.
Well, and you would have had a good parallel to that. I don't know how familiar you are with the TV show Alias,
but with Jennifer Garner.
In Alias, there was a great example of a main character who was brought into a season who was extremely significant to the show and the mythology, and then because the actress didn't want to come back or various different reasons why, they had to write around this massive character and this massive part of the story. And it was really awkward. It was all that kind of thing. Oh, when's Irina going to come back? You know, at what point is this going to happen? And it didn't for a long time. And it cast too long a shadow. And it sort of worked to the show's detriment. But in this show, it is about Mulder and the fact they do have Duchovny around to pop up at various points. You know, even being within and without, even though he's barely in it and he doesn't really say anything, he's there. You know, you still feel like it's partly Mulder's story when he's in the alien ship and you've got him being experimented on in very Dwayne Barry style fashion, which I really appreciated because it reminded me of what Dwayne Barry went through, which I thought was good in the way they filmed it.
And it's also tied again to Alien to give you that body horror pregnancy thing. Like the drill in the mouth is not exactly subtle Freudian imagery. Like,
no, they don't do subtle imagery on the X-Files.
I love the 8th season's body horror as well. Like, cause the 8th season is, we'll probably talk about this if we're back tomorrow, but like in terms of like the style of it, it's very much like the earlier seasons, but it's got this wonderful sort of gritty, violent, bloody, like nastiness that runs through it, which sort of reminds me of the Vancouver years and which kind I think fits very well with the pregnancy, because there's, and we'll probably talk about that a bit more tomorrow as well, because there's a sense that like And again, like, it's the subtleness that runs through. It's not the mythology. It plays to the single episodes as well. There's a sense that, like, Scully is not entirely sure about her pregnancy. Not in, like, a literal sense, but in terms of, like, an existential sense. Like, what does it mean to be pregnant after being told that she couldn't be pregnant? What are the risks involved? What is it going to be like without Mulder there? All these sort of big, tough questions that are sort of philosophical and personal. And you have this sort of play out through this, like, really horrific violence. Like, the 8th season, I think, has the first viewer discretion warnings dating back to the 4th season. Like, this, the season really goes for it, and I kind of admire that it sort of starts with Mulder in the chair, where it's like, look, okay, David Duchovny's back, but this isn't going to be pleasant.
No. It's not going to be, we're not going to make it easy for any of them. And that's what's really good. It's the first season to really get back that core essence of what made the X-Files, you know, and you do see that play out in subsequent episodes. So it's a really good start, and we'll be back for subsequent episodes, Darren, as you've sort of suggested. We're going to be back for Patience and Roadrunners tomorrow, basically.
Yay.
Yeah, and Roadrunners, I mean, Roadrunners is just fantastic, so I can't wait to talk about that one. That's
if we
be
disagree,
great.
I'm going to have to slug you.
Duh. Don't even start me. It's just, even thinking about it gives me like a chill. Oh, don't even pun about it. It's just not. It's not cricket.
Don't worry. I think you'll give the episode a strong spine.
No. Right. No. We've got to end this now. But yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back tomorrow for Patience and Roadrunners. So continue watching the Podwatch. We're closing in on the final hurdle now. We've only got a fair few left before hopefully we get stuck in season 11. How exciting. But as ever, you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast. Look us up on the X-Files Basement on Facebook, and check us out on iTunes if you haven't already. And always remember, until tomorrow, trust no one.